This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here. Thank you for tuning in. Nowadays, people have a misconception when it comes to antiquing. Many people think everything old is worth something. Reality shows like American Pickers, Storage Wars, and others have perpetuated this idea of collecting old items as easy and profitable. Joining me today to dispel these myths is Editor-in-Chief of Auction Central News, Catherine Saunders Watson. Thank you for joining me, Catherine.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Mason.
Could you tell me a little bit about how you got into auctioneering?
Well, actually, I'm not an auctioneer, but I've always had an involvement in antiques and collectibles and fine art. And when I was a child, I grew up in a house that was filled with all kinds of amazing things and old furniture and artworks. And I just thought we lived in a junky house. I did. I really was hoping for things more like what was in the Jetsons house. But I learned to gain an appreciation for it, and I remember going to an event with my mother when I was 12 years old and seeing an old antique toy on the table of a dealer's table at an antique show, and I thought it was fascinating, and I had enough pocket money for it, and I bought the toy. It was a horse-drawn wagon, and that's what started me collecting toys. And I think you'll find in the antiques and collecting business that most dealers started as collectors, and it becomes so consuming that after a while you just think, I've got to figure out a way to make a living from this. You know, I've got to turn what I love into something that pays the bills, and that really is how most people get into the trade. But I've had a long history with antiques, art, collectibles. I love it. I'll always do it, and I totally understand why people get consumed by it.
Yeah, and you know what? There's a lot more TV shows about this stuff, too. You know, you got yourself Pawn Stars, and you got yourself the American Pickers, and all this other stuff. And, you know, a lot more, I want to say hobbyists are jumping into it, but do you think that these TV shows, like, accurately portray how this is done?
Well, some of it is reality, and we know that it's being planned, but it has to be done that way because otherwise you'd be spending hours, if not days, watching people work really hard to find the gold amongst, you know, the chaff. For instance, I remember interviewing the American Pickers when they were first starting out, and I thought to myself, they have the kind of passion with what they're doing that young kids are going to get inspired, or younger people. And from what they told me, they have a huge audience of kids. It's kind of like that old, you know, Beaver Cleaver wanting to go with his buddies and get into places where they shouldn't be and just sort of dig around and see what they can find. It's what they call good junk. So I think that's been really great. But the thing to really that people should keep in mind is that these great pieces don't just fall out of trees and they don't appear on every single appraisal table, say, at the Antiques Roadshow, because I know that it can take days of people coming in with things before an expert will say, bingo, that's the one we'll show on the air. And, you know, that can be a time-consuming, frustrating process, but it's why we do it, because we love it. We're looking for that discovery.
Did you ever have someone who thought they had something like really important or really rare and it just wasn't?
All the time. And it's very disappointing because you see the looks on their faces and they're so dejected. Or another scenario that's very common, and I saw this a lot when I was a dealer, people will come in and think something is much older or has a much more interesting background or provenance than it really does. And you can tell immediately looking at it that it was probably a reproduction, maybe made 10 years ago, and they think maybe it's a century old because family lore told them that. You know, people tend to embellish things, and right. Also there's a lot of lack of information. People may actually think that something belonged to a Civil War ancestor, when in reality it was probably bought at a pawn shop a few days ago. So there is that disappointment, but I can tell you the fun is always in the search and discovery of locating that great piece to add to your collection. And any collector will tell you that, no matter what they collect. If it's Chanel jewelry, if it's baseball cards, they're going to tell you that discovering and bidding on and winning the object, the excitement of that whole experience, it's the best part of the process of collecting.
That is so true. I like to collect comic books and toys, and it is about the search. It's about completing your series or whatever it could be. It's like you just want to, like a completist. I want it all, and I want it all in a little box and displayed, and it's like it's a treasure.
And you want it now. want it all, and you want it now. But, you know, I tell everyone who's new to collecting that they should never buy something because they think it might be valuable in the years to come. The only reason that you should collect something really is because it gives you pleasure to own it, or you want to view it in your home and share it with your friends. If you only buy what you personally like and enjoy owning, then you'll never have buyer's remorse if the market tanks and the value goes down. You're still going to look at that object and love it.
That's so true. But you know what? I always worry about people who don't understand that portion, like my mother. She likes to collect antiques because she believes that at some point it's going to be super valuable later on. And, you know, it breaks my heart because I can look at it and be like, Mom, you know, you think that this was made like 100 years ago and it's just made to look like that. You can see like it's been printed and from like, 2000. What can you do to help someone like my mother, like little tips to look out for to see if it's really that genuinely old?
Well, there are a lot of things that you can do now that you couldn't do some years ago to research. One thing is, if you have access to a computer or a mobile device, which just about everybody does, you can go online to liveauctioneers.com and search the free price results database. That's going to tell you not only the selling prices for every item that was ever listed in any of the auctions that ran through Live Auctioneers, but it's also going to show you really big and largeable pictures. It's going to give you a great description of the piece, and you can compare what you have to what you see there. Now, it's not foolproof. You have to, you know, some reproductions are convincing, most of them are not. But the price database, which is absolutely free, is up to the minute. You can even see current prices from an auction that just ended a few minutes ago. You know, you can ask any appraiser, including the ones that you see on popular TV appraisal shows. They're going to tell you that they used to lug around stacks of printed price guides. In fact, in the case of the Antiques Roadshow, they used to load up a full semi-trailer of nothing but price guides to take from stop to stop. But now appraisers just bring a laptop and they look up the recent market prices on Live Auctioneers. And they all tell me it's their secret weapon. It's their number one pricing resource. Just the other day, I got an email from a very well-known Midwestern appraiser. Great guy. He's doing about 100 appraisal stops this year, he told me. And he sent me a picture of him with his laptop opened up at the table and a big screen with the picture from a past auction because someone had brought in, I think it was a like an old family quilt or a coverlet. And he found one very similar to it that was in the archive database on Live Auctioneers. So he was able to put that image right up on the screen for everyone at this appraisal event to see. So really, you know, the internet and having access to all that information on your mobile devices, it's a dream come true. If you go to an antique show or you go to an auction, you look at a piece and you're thinking, how much should I bid or how much should I offer the dealer? You can call up Live Auctioneers. You can find the piece. You know what it just sold for. And also, it's a two-edged sword because you can look at prices for something from, say, 10, 15 years ago, and you'll see that the market price has gone down on it. But that's going to save you money.
Yeah,
you're
that's
not
true.
Going to overpay.
You know what? Speaking of overpaying, what about limited editions? I've seen those, like, when it comes to, like, DVDs or video games, you know, 1 of 100. Are those even worth it anymore, or is it just like a buzzword now?
Oh, boy. Well, this is my opinion, okay? But I say no, they're not worth buying. Not if they're the usual type you see that were made in the many thousands. Because to me, thousands does not mean limited. Other people may have a different opinion about it, but generally, I say if it was made expressly to be a collectible, then don't bother. But we get back to that same question. Does it make you happy to own it? If it does, then buy it. Don't worry about what anyone else thinks, but I don't buy anything that's a limited edition, and I certainly would never buy one thinking that it's going to go up in value, because it's just not.
What do you think you should, like, some rules you should keep in mind for collecting anything?
Well, one thing, and this might have helped your mother, just because it's old or older doesn't mean it's valuable. Absolutely not. And the other thing is condition. It's absolutely everything. Don't buy a junker. Spend a little more money, get a piece that's in nice condition, and be patient. If you don't see a really nice example of, say, in your case, the toy that you want to add to your collection, don't worry about it, because it's going to come around eventually. Keep watching the auctions. And there are auction houses that specialize in just about everything nowadays. You can buy great things in general auctions that have a mix. But in your case, there are quite a few toy auction houses, and that's all they sell. So really, you have to be patient. In the case of toys, which you like, remember that having the original box usually doubles the value. That's the rule of thumb. And the other thing is, collectors love signed pieces, whether it's an artwork or costume jewelry. I know that's a really hot collecting category and has been for many years. It's costume jewelry. But the collectors really love if they can find a piece that says Trifari or Chanel or Miriam Haskell or whatever the designer's name might be. It really adds to the value.
You said don't buy a junker, but what happens if you're like, you look at it and you're like, hey, I can fix it. Is that something you should do or no?
Well, by junker, now, if it just needs a minor repair, let's say all it needs is to have a wheel refastened or something else, not paint, I'll get to that in a second, but if it looks like an easy repair and you can fix it, yes, bonanza. When I say a junker, I mean something that's lost all its original paint, or it's got lots of missing parts that you know you'll never be able to get the parts for. I just wouldn't invest a lot of money in it. Particularly with antique toys or vintage toys, you know, the collectors are very, very picky. They want mint. Nowadays, if you want, if you want to buy a mint condition piece, you're going to have to pay for it. And if you go down the scale to, say, a condition 6 or a condition 5, you might buy that only because you want to fill the slot in your collection. But buy it only because you know you're going to keep in mind you want to upgrade that piece, that when a better condition example of that particular toy comes along, you're going to grab it, and then you're going to try and sell your lesser example some other way, maybe in an auction or to a collector at a collecting convention.
That is so true. I've bought toys out of the box just because I knew I wouldn't see it in a while. And then when I find one in the box, I do get rid of it. I actually give it to my nephew so he can play with it at this point. I got the pristine one over here.
Exactly. That's a perfect way to collect, and it doesn't matter what you're collecting. If it's something that was mass-produced, I'm not talking about something that's one of a kind, like a painting. Obviously, you're not going to find a second painting just like the one you have. But if it's something that was mass-produced, it's very likely. And again, I say look on Live Auctioneers. See how many have sold over the past few years. See how many of them are out there. You know, this is something so important to note, that there used to be a great mystery about collecting. Before we had the internet, before there was eBay, people didn't really know how many examples of any given object were out there. it would be possible that you would pay a large amount of money for something, and then all of a sudden there might be a warehouse find, an old warehouse find of old toys. Or there might be some that turn up overseas. And all of a sudden, you paid a huge amount of money for a toy that you thought was the only surviving example, but really it wasn't. There were others out there, but you just didn't know about it. So when the internet came along and when eBay came along, it exposed the source and it exposed how many pieces are out there. So there were a few years of tumult where there was kind of a turnover. People were a little nervous about paying a lot of money for this or that. But eventually it all settled out, and after a few years, everything that was out there was exposed. And, you know, then the prices settled down.
You know, when I'm buying things, I always look to see if, especially if it's something signed, I always look for a certificate. But do you really need one nowadays? Or?
Well, I mean, the things that you probably would need a certificate for would be sports collectibles and any kind of sports memorabilia that you buy, whether it's a jersey, a signed baseball, no matter what it is. The sports collectibles auction houses now are very attuned to the fact that collectors want those certificates of authenticity. And there are a couple of grading companies, and that's all they do, and they're scrupulous about it. They grade the objects for the auction houses, and that way the bidders can feel safe about buying. Another thing that probably it's a really good idea to get a COA for would be any kind of antiquity or tribal art object, because there are so many strict laws about repatriation of cultural objects to the countries of origin, or they may be tribal objects that should never have been sold. But you need to deal with a really reputable auction house that will stand behind the piece forever, not just today, but if it's discovered later on down the track, years down the track, that the piece had been stolen at some point, or, you know, that it should not have been sold in the first place, then that auction house should stand behind it. In that particular niche of collecting, you'll find that they do. The good ones do, without question.
What about anything that was restored? Would you have to look into that? If someone was trying to sell something, do they have explicitly say that it's been restored? Or
if they know that it's been restored, it's their obligation to tell you.
Okay.
You should be able to tell. You know, one thing that you should take with you if you go, like, to an antique show or a flea market is a black light, a battery-operated black light, because when you shine that black light on any piece that's been restored, you'll see the difference in color.
Oh, wow, that's a good tip.
Oh, yeah, they're not expensive. You can get one for less than $15, and they're very worthwhile. You'll see that all the auction houses have them. And if you're going to a preview before an auction, just to look at things before they're sold, usually the auction house will have a black light there, and you can ask. And they'll gladly let you use it, take a look at the piece.
You know, for someone who's interested in starting their own huge collection, where do you think they should start at?
Well, it depends on what you're collecting. Again, I would emphasize that you must only buy things that you really love, unless you're a dealer. If you're a dealer, you have a completely different mentality. And that's another thing to mention. Collectors eventually become dealers in many cases, if only part-time. And that's because they want to upgrade. You know, they want to be able to go to shows early and get in during the setup. They want to be able to sell their lesser pieces so they can afford to buy better pieces. And that's the way they do it. They start to network with other dealers and collectors. They meet the collectors coming into the show. They meet the dealers during the setup. And usually, you know, you'll find in most cases, I'm going to venture a guess to say 90% of collectors also do some selling, if not on the side, at shows or online. But to get back to what you're saying, how should they start a collection? Well, first you have to educate yourself. You decide what it is that you want to collect, and then start reading everything you possibly can about it. Start researching auction prices online. And it's very helpful to join collector clubs. There's a collector club for just about everything, and every club has its own convention. When you go to these conventions, usually they're all held at a hotel, and they have what they call room hopping. And that's where everybody brings things they want to sell. They set them up in their hotel rooms, and then you just go room to room. The doors are wide open. The collectors go room to room, and they buy and sell from each other. And it's a really nice way to get to know people, and you're buying from your fellow collectors who are members of the club, so you know that they're legitimate people. So that's a good thing to do, too. Just network every way you can, but educate yourself first before you buy.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I mean, this was so informative.
Well, you're tremendous. You're just great to talk to because you understand the collecting. You know, I would like to mention, if possible, what some of the hot collecting categories are right now so we can leave your listeners with a few tips.
Okay,
cool.
Would
that be okay?
Absolutely. Go for it.
All right. Well, I decided to make a little list for you of five collecting categories that I think are bubbling under and going to get hotter. And some of them are already pretty much on the rise. Number five would be Hollywood memorabilia. And that's anything related to movies, TV, any sort of pop culture from animated films to, our favorite sitcoms, things that people wore, things that were used on the set. Marilyn and Elvis, and James Dean. Those are the three big ones, Marilyn, Elvis, and James Dean. Anything related to them just continues to be fascinating to the public. Number four on the list would be vintage photographs. That's an area that's really going up. All the great names in photography, those are the ones to watch for. Dorothea Lange, Eisenstadt, Cartier-Bresson, Ouija, who was kind of a punk photographer of his day, Ansel Adams, Edward Curtis, who did all the beautiful Native American photography, and the famous Civil War photographer Matthew Brady, even Linda McCartney. I think her work is tremendous. She documented such a special time of the music industry, and her photographs, if you can buy them, I think they're fantastic. Number three on the list, vintage Japanese woodblock prints. I've noticed that museums are buying them for their collection, and that's always a good sign. Number two, you'll be happy to hear this, vintage toys.
And
that includes early Star Wars, Star Trek, Transformers, and other types of robots, any sort of early video games and consoles going back to Pong, Space Invaders, Donkey Kong, and the later ones. If you're out at a yard sale and you see any old video consoles or accessories, buy them. The rule is, in general, look back 15 to 20 years, and you'll see the toys that are starting to rise in collectability. You're basically looking back at what today's young adults would have played with when they were kids and what captures their interest and has a nostalgic factor to it. Number one on my list is old concert posters. With every successive pop culture auction, the prices seem to go up on those 1960s, 70s posters for concerts by the big three, and that's Jimi Hendrix, The Doors, and The Beatles. In fact, there's a new book coming out the end of this month about concert posters. It's called The Overstreet Guide to Collecting Concert Posters. I think it's going to have a very definite beneficial effect on that part of the collectibles market. And I was looking at an advanced PDF copy of the book, and I could tell this is the kind of book that's going to inspire a lot of new collectors to get into the hobby. The images are really colorful and exciting. And people who maybe are, I don't know, boomer generation or, you know, the Beatles, it's a funny thing. Young people love the Beatles today, too. Even kids know Yellow Submarine.
Yes.
So, you know, that's my top five for right now. So I'd say old concert posters, I'm buying them.
Well, thanks again. That was a really good list.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure talking to you, and good luck with your toy collecting.
Thank you for joining me, Catherine, and giving insight on antiquing. Make sure you check out auctioncentralnews.com for the latest auction news.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.